is Over the Garden Gate, a program brought to you by the University of California Cooperative Extension Master Gardener Program of Tuolumne County. The mission of the UCCE Master Gardeners is to provide research-based gardening information to the public. If you would like to contact our Master Gardener Program, please call our hotline, which is area code 209-533-5912. The hotline is not manned full-time, but we do pick up our messages and we will get back to you within the week.
Hello everybody, this is Debbie Powell. I'm the Master Gardener Coordinator for both Calaveras and Tuolumne County. And I am talking to Linda Reevely, who is a Tuolumne Master Gardener and a former president of the Tuolumne Master Gardener Group. Hello, Linda.
Hi, Debbie. It's fun to be back on the radio. Thank you.
And I should admit, it's so lovely being here in your garden. You've made so many changes to this particular garden that I'm looking at. I can hear the fountains in the background. And
the water fountain makes lovely noise.
It's very lovely.
When we installed it, we designed it specifically because of the sound.
Oh.
And it was, you know, besides having a water feature that everyone's supposed to have, I just like the sound.
And it's, you're not talking about a lot of water, so you're not...
Okay, this fountain, this consists of three rather large ceramic pots. All three of these pots came from Vietnam.
Oh.
And one of them, the tallest of them, is a large, slim turquoise pot that has beautiful glaze that looks like it's flowing as water down the sides of it. It was designed to be a fountain originally and came with the pipe and everything you need to make it a fountain. The next one is shorter but fatter, and it's dark blue on the top, shades through light blue and down into brown on the bottom. We made that into a fountain by taking the hole that was in the bottom of the pot and running a plastic tube through it. And then on the top, we found a plate just the right size to fit in the top.
Okay.
Drilled a hole in it, put a copper fitting on it to hook the tube to, and then epoxied the plate in the top.
Oh my goodness.
And that's because if that pot was full of water, it would be heavy, and it could pose a danger to birds who come in my yard to bathe. Mm-hmm. And I have birds bathe. I have a bird bath. I have another little fountain. I have a lot of birds who like to get in the water. And we were concerned that one just might have some problem with a deep pot with flowing water. The other pot is a same style of pot, but it's dark. It's blue, that kind of indigo blue.
Right.
And it's squared off, and it has plants planted in the top. They're all placed on a large basin of water that's actually underneath the ground and underneath rocks that are around the bases of them, and that has a recirculating pump for each of the two fountains and an automatic filler.
Oh, how clever.
So
you don't see equipment.
Yeah, you don't ever see any of the equipment, but if you need to work on it, you just have to lift up the flower pot, open the door, and it's all very handy.
Very clever, very smart.
The best part is the automatic filler, because I never have to come out with the hose and refill the fountain.
Oh,
it
that
takes
is nice.
Care of it all by itself. And it uses remarkably little water.
That's what it looks like.
Because it's all recirculated right away.
Right.
And my bees love it because it splashes out on the rocks at the base, and there's always bees getting drinks there.
Okay.
And I like the noise.
But we didn't plan to talk about the fountain, but we plan to talk about tomatoes and what kind of tomatoes you're growing in your garden this year.
Tomatoes. Well, I've been looking into tomatoes a little bit. This spring I started 168 tomatoes and ended up giving a lot of them away because I now have 40 or so growing in my own garden.
Oh my
but
goodness.
But I chose a number of varieties to start, and I chose them because each one of them offered something that was unique or interesting or, in my case, delicious, both to look at and to eat. There's over 15,000 varieties of tomatoes in the world.
Good Lord.
There are 3,000 that are considered heirloom tomatoes in the United States alone.
That's a huge number. I had no idea.
It is a huge number. Tomatoes naturally came from the South American Andes.
Okay.
We used to think they came from Mexico because our word for tomato comes from the Nahuatl, the language of central Mexico at the time of conquest, and it was tomatl. But we changed that as Europeans to tomato. or if you're in Great Britain, tomato. And so the first ones we really believe were probably grown in the same area where potatoes originated, in the Andes. They were small, they were probably yellow, but by the time of the conquest, and by the time that people took the tomato plants back to Europe, they already had a wide variety of different kinds of cultivars of tomatoes, including one that I actually still grow in my garden and also grow many varieties of, the beefsteak tomato.
Oh, I love beefsteak.
I do too. I found out that it's caused by a specific genetic mutation that affects the way that it's actually a stem cell, which in plants we know are right at the growing surfaces of things. In the beefsteak tomato, there are more of these little channels than there are in regular tomatoes. So you know how there's a seed cavity in tomatoes, and you have, three or four or five or even more little seed cavities with the seeds lining them.
Right.
In the beefsteak, remember, the holes are really small,
yeah. And
there are a lot more of them with fewer seeds. And that's all caused by a genetic mutation that happened sometime before the 1500s.
Oh, my gosh.
So we've had tomatoes a long time.
A very long time. Isn't that incredible?
Yeah. And, of course, not only are they a huge part of our cuisine, but you think of Italy, and you just can't think of Italian food without a tomato popping up.
No, you sure can't.
Same thing is true in Spain. Tomatoes are a big part of the culinary atmosphere of Greece, and even in the Middle East.
They're eating tomatoes, too.
A lot of tomatoes. There are a lot of Persian varieties of tomatoes, for instance. Persians are great gardeners. Oh. And great keepers of interesting plants. And so there's a lot of interesting Persian varieties of tomatoes.
Isn't that something?
And Russian. There's several great tomatoes come from Russia.
Okay.
A number of them from Japan, mostly because Japan has a great source of people who are plant breeders. And they've bred some very interesting varieties of tomatoes. I'm growing one of those as well. So let's talk about the ones I put in the ground.
Yeah, why don't we?
I planted both large tomatoes and cherry tomatoes. And
okay.
I only have one that sort of fits in the middle of those, but it is one of the most prolific and common varieties, Ace 55.
Oh, yeah. It seems like that's been around forever.
Ace 55s have been around such a long time that they used to be a hybrid, and now they actually breed naturally. They
really?
Are open pollinated.
Really? I didn't know that.
I think that's one of the most amazing transformations, that over the years they became fertile with this hybrid genetic material, and they still produce Ace 55s, that beautiful round tomato about 2.5-3 inches across.
Right.
Red as red can be, nice flavor, good keeper. Ace 55 is a great tomato. They were originally bred for the Campbell's Soup Company.
Oh, my gosh. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, I think it's wonderful.
And we love Campbell's soup.
And we love Ace 55.
We love the
I think
tomato.
Of it as the sort of backbone tomato in my garden. And then everything else is just almost for fun. One of the ones that's a cherry tomato that I absolutely love, and so do many other people, is Sun Gold.
Oh, gosh, who doesn't love it? It's so sweet.
They're so sweet. And they're so delicious. And they, in their ripe stage, they are just the most magnificent shade of orange.
They are.
They make a great spaghetti sauce. All you have to do is cut them in half and saute them with a little onion and garlic until they soften a bit, and serve
really?
Them with spaghetti. It's fabulous.
Oh, my gosh.
Always use a little butter when you saute them. Helps.
Good tip.
These little Sun Gold tomatoes come from the Tokita Seed Company in Japan, and they were introduced in 1992, both here and in Europe.
Oh, my goodness.
So we've had Sun Golds available to us for that long. Many of us would not even think of summer without Sun Golds.
Oh, I know.
Because they're so delicious.
They're the candy of the tomato world.
They sure are. And it's hard to get them picked because you just stand there and eat them.
I know. They're addictive.
We call it grazing in the garden.
Yeah.
Sometimes you just have to go out and eat tomatoes.
I know.
It's the best.
I know. It is good.
Now, this year, I decided to plant something really different that I had not had before, and that would be Brad's Atomic Grape Tomatoes.
Boy, that's a mouthful.
Isn't that, though?
And that, could you say it one more time?
Brad's Atomic Grape
Tomato.
They're a grape tomato. They're about an inch and a half long, apparently, maybe a little bit bigger than that. They range in color from almost completely black on one end or side through greens and purples and golds.
So as they're ripening?
Well, just the whole tomato. Some of them are ripe when they're... You pick these by feeling them. If they have that little bit of give...
So you can't go by the color.
You can't really go by the color after they start to color up.
Okay, because they could be any one of those colors.
Any one of those colors and kind of mixed. And they look like they're tie-dyed or something. They're completely amazing. These are bred by Brad Gates of Wild Boar Farms in Napa. And he is a very prolific California tomato developer and grower, and he's also responsible for the Berkeley tie-dye,
really?
Which is a green tomato with pink lines on it. They're just totally goofy looking and delicious. So Brad's Atomic Grapes, I'm looking forward to seeing these come out.
I am too.
Another grape tomato, which is in fact actually more like a space tomato, is Juliet. And Juliet is one of the few hybrids I actually do grow. Juliets are very productive. They make a lovely tomato between about an inch and a half to about 3 inches long. It's that elongated shape of a San Marzano or an Amish paste. And they're delicious. They're great salad tomato, and they make a really good cooked tomato.
Okay.
Juliet.
So Juliet, and that you could use for spaghetti sauce?
Absolutely.
Or any of the different tomato type sauces?
Exactly. And they're perfect. And you can can them. You can can them in sauce or even just cut them up and can them and use that for your spaghetti sauce
base. How about salsa?
Be great for salsa.
Okay.
They're a little firmer than some of the others.
Uh-huh.
Many of these tomatoes I'm growing this year are actually beefsteak types. They're big, they're soft, they're meant for salad or just eating fresh.
Right.
Although they do can. Some of these can very well. Another one that does can very well, and it's also big, is pineapple.
Pineapple.
I would not have a tomato garden without pineapple.
I'm not
Pineapple
familiar
with are that. 2.5 to 3 pound fruits. They're huge.
2.5? Okay, we're talking pounds. 2.5 to 3 pounds.
You can hold one of these in both of your hands together. You just hold it around.
Oh, my gosh.
Sometimes they get just enormous. They're red, and then sort of the center and radiating out, they're yellow. So when you slice them across, rather than horizontally rather than vertically through the tomato, you get these beautiful slices. Sometimes they're a little irregularly shaped.
Okay.
I think there's a little of that Costolito Genovese or Costolito Florentina, which are those ones that have the big folds. There's a little bit of that genetics here.
Okay.
But they are extraordinary. They are delicious, and they're sweet.
Oh, okay.
They are one of the best fresh tomatoes I've ever had, and they can like crazy.
Hmm.
They look a little odd in the can, but boy, you put that into a pot of soup and you think you've gone to heaven.
Wow.
These things are really good.
Gosh, I want to grow that one too.
I think I actually saved you a couple.
Oh, good. Thank you.
You're welcome. Now, one that's purely orange when it's ripe, produces a very round, very firm tomato, is Kellogg's Breakfast.
Kellogg's Breakfast.
Mm-hmm. Now, we're not talking the Kellogg's cereal company.
Sure.
We're talking a gentleman named Darrell Kellogg, who was a railroad inspector, I believe, and lived in Redford, Michigan. And he discovered this tomato and bred them and got them into the seed trade. And
really?
Kellogg's Breakfasts are just lovely.
So this wasn't his
that was
line
not
of
his
work.
Thing. No.
It wasn't his profession.
Nope.
He's not a scientist. He's
nope.
not a plant breeder.
Nope.
Well, I mean,
he was a plant breeder.
Plant breeder, yes.
But he was just a person who was very fond of tomatoes and looking out for sports and interesting things.
But what's a sport?
A sport is a spontaneous, a plant that comes up spontaneously that's different from its ancestors.
A mutation?
Probably caused by a mutation.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. So he recognized the sport
for Kellogg's Breakfast because they're an amazing color. And these things are just bright orange.
Wow.
And they're delicious.
And
they're large, they're succulent.
Are they kind of a more acidic tomato?
They're round. They're not horribly acidic, but there's a little tang to them.
Okay.
And sliced up with a little salad dressing and a salad, or even on a plate sliced with other tomatoes with just a little olive oil and vinegar drizzled over them. They are amazingly delicious.
That sounds wonderful.
And they're really pretty.
Okay.
A lot of people I know wouldn't want to do without Kellogg's Breakfast. But sticking to the color theme, I'm also growing this year Aunt Ruby's German greens.
Okay.
Now, I've never had these before, but they were bred by a lady named Ruby Arnold, who again is a backyard plant breeder, who passed away in 1977, and she lived in Greenville, Tennessee. And Aunt Ruby's German greens are the largest of the green tomatoes, the ones that are
they're
finished ripening, and they're still bright green.
So they never turn orange, red,
they kind of go from white to green.
They go, wow.
They kind of
start
incredible. Off, the littler ones are whiter, and they get more color and more color and more color. It's, again, it's a beefsteak style tomato. Meaning large with the small seed cavities spread throughout. And apparently they're just yummy.
Mm.
I saw a picture once of someone who'd made a tray where they sliced tomatoes by color and laid them out, and it looked like a rainbow on the tray.
Aww.
I thought, wow, I want to do that. So
yeah.
Hence some of my tomato choices this year. One of the others that I like a lot is a Jubilee. A Jubilee, again, is one of those mixed color tomatoes.
Okay.
They're big. Burpees introduced them in 1943. They've been around. People like them. It's a delicious tomato. It has a very different flavor from some of the others. It's a richer, kind of more meaty tomato flavor as opposed to the little bit sweeter varieties that I've grown a lot of.
Okay. So
Jubilee.
What would you use those? I mean, could you use them in sauces?
You could use them in sauces, and certainly you could use them as a salad tomato because it's a very interesting, nice taste. And they're pretty.
Oh, okay.
You know, I grow things for my eyes. I can buy tomatoes at the grocery store, but I can't buy these.
These are fascinating. They must look beautiful, all the
different ones
in a bowl, or like you said, sliced on a plate.
Yeah, and I put in some new varieties this year, but generally that's my plan, is that they just look really interesting. And to that end, I planted Marvel Stripes.
Okay.
Of the striped tomatoes, like green zebra and just plain zebras, marvels, there's a couple different marvel varieties. The marvel stripe is a red tomato with green stripes.
Okay.
And it, again, is the largest of the striped tomatoes.
Oh, my gosh.
And marvels, these came from Oaxaca, Mexico.
Ooh.
Originally. And they're beautiful. They really are a beautiful tomato.
And are you anticipating that they're going to be a sweeter tomato or more acidic? Or?
I haven't grown them. I've just seen them.
Okay.
So we're going to find out.
And
I
so
would anticipate they would
them.
Probably have a little more acid since most of the stripy ones do.
Oh, okay.
They just have a little
That's a good tip.
A little more hit of acid
right.
than sweetness. That kind of gets us down. Oh, and I have beefsteaks.
Okay.
And I told you that's 1500s beefsteaks.
Yes.
Beefsteaks have been bred continuously from the 1500s.
It's amazing.
Their genetics are spread throughout the tomato world. Almost any time you cut into a tomato and it has those small seed cavities spread out more, it has beefsteak genetics.
Oh, so that's the way you can tell.
Yeah.
Kind of and like genealogy.
The genealogy of tomatoes.
Right.
And it seems that the plant breeders love these things because they have a great deal of genetic potential.
Oh.
You can crossbreed them with things. You can, and you just get more and more interesting things out of them. The beefsteak.
Fascinating.
And they're red. Mm. Red, like fire engine red.
That
and they're really good. Something to know, though, I put in all these big, giant tomatoes, which means I have to feed them heavily.
Oh,
and
glad you mentioned that.
We planted them with horse manure this year. We fertilized them with liquid fertilizer before we put them in the ground a couple days. And then we used a little bit of a commercial sprinkle-on fertilizer that you can find at your local hardware store, tomato food one. And we used a little bit of that on the top. And my tomatoes just took off.
Wow.
They were, you know, they were a foot high when I put them in, and they're at least that wide now, if not wider, and they're growing taller very quickly. I anticipate also feeding them a fair amount of calcium.
Okay.
All tomatoes in our area are generally calcium deficient, which is where you get those cat's eyes, those brown ucky spots on the bottom.
Yeah.
It's not a biotic disease. It's an abiotic disease caused by calcium deficiencies.
Okay.
And a lot of our soils are pretty calcium deficient. Again, if you look on those tomato fertilizers, look for one that has at least 8% calcium.
Okay.
Because that will give your plants the boost they need. I have another master gardener friend who plants mm-hmm. them with dehydrated milk.
Really?
Yep, she puts a cup of dehydrated milk in with each tomato.
Oh, isn't that clever?
Yeah, pretty smart.
Is there anything else that you can use from maybe your
For calcium?
Pet for
calcium, you know, you'd think blood meal. Ooh, that would have lots of, or bone
right,
meal.
Right.
Neither one of them is terribly rich in calcium.
Okay.
What's rich in calcium are ground up poultry feathers.
What?
Yeah. Is that amazing?
That is amazing.
So they grind poultry feathers and use that to produce the calcium in these fertilizer mixes.
Oh, my gosh.
You can buy elemental calciums.
Mm-hmm.
I suspect you'd have to go to the ag supply store that's down in Modesto, over by Ceres,
okay.
to actually find them, because they're a little more specialized
mm-hmm.
kind of product.
Right.
But you can buy essential, you know, they're a mineral. They're not artificial.
Mm-hmm.
They're a mineral. It's mined from the ground.
Right.
And you could buy that and use that with them as well.
Okay.
But I can't think of anything else that's quite as good a source as either feather meal or the mineral.
Okay. Well, that sounds good. So. I'm assuming, and maybe this is correct, you correct me if I'm wrong, if you get fertilizer that is specific for tomatoes, wouldn't they already have calcium in the fertilizer?
Okay, one's made for our area.
Oh,
do.
Right. Okay.
One's made for the Midwest or something. Don't, because their soils are much richer in calcium than ours are.
Oh, so check the label.
Check the label.
Check the label.
Absolutely.
See if there's any calcium in there.
Use that advice from Master Gardeners. Always read the label. And I picked some up the other day, 8% calcium. I was so happy I ran right up to the check stand with this bag of stuff in my arms. And just look
That's a happy gardener.
It is. Look for tomato products, ones that are specifically designed for tomatoes, because you don't need as much nitrogen for tomatoes as you do potassium and phosphorus and magnesium, because the tomato, we're mostly interested in the fruit.
Mm-hmm.
While the plants
right.
are lovely and smell good, you cannot eat them. They
right.
are toxic.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. All parts except for the
All
fruit.
All parts except for the fruit are toxic.
Yeah.
And we're not kidding around about this toxicity. This is a toxicity that can actually kill you.
Mm-hmm.
It probably wouldn't, but I don't think it would make you feel any better.
Right, right. So best not to eat it.
Don't eat the...
Just the fruit.
Even though there's a great craze for eating the tops of vegetables, etc.
Right.
Stop at tomato leaves. They are not edible. Don't eat tomato leaves.
Right.
They smell good. I like them. They're pretty, but mm-hmm. don't eat them.
Yeah. Good advice.
So the few other tomatoes I put in this year were little red pears, which are small pear tomato.
Oh, I've seen those before.
They're really cute.
Those are adorable.
Yeah, they look like cherry tomatoes, except they're pear-shaped and they're cute.
Yes, they are so cute.
And black cherries.
Black cherries. Just the name alone.
I know. Doesn't it just get you? They don't taste like cherries.
Okay.
They are black.
They're black?
They are black, except that, you know, the top end near the end that's not the blossom end at the bottom, but the stem end
right.
is black. They look
oh
like almost
gosh.
Someone's painted them. And
oh
then the
gosh.
Rest of it is dark red. And a black cherry tomato is just like the quintessential little bite of tomato-ness. It's not that same sweetness that a sun
mm-hmm.
gold has.
Right.
It just tastes of delicious tomato.
Wow. It's the essence.
It is an essence of
essence
tomato.
It's the essence of the tomato.
Now, one of the interesting things I found out about cherry tomatoes is that there's a rather large international argument over who invented them.
Oh. Really?
Yeah, and the silly thing is that the first tomatoes that were taken to Europe, there were a bunch of small tomato varieties in there.
Okay.
But people get strange, I guess you might say, and they want to think that they invented something. And one of the first groups of people who really made a big deal out of it were the Greeks. And the Greeks on Santorini Island... You know, the one with the blue
right,
and white.
Right.
No, yeah, and it's gorgeous. And you're sitting
uh-huh.
in a volcano that blew
right.
up once.
Yeah,
yes.
yeah.
So Greeks on Santorini were growing these small tomatoes.
Hmm.
And these tomatoes are called, let's see if I can find this on my paper here, Tomataki Santorini. Tomataki is obviously tomato in Greek.
Okay.
So in 2013, the European Union, the executive board of the European Union, gave the Tomataki Santorini breed protected status.
Oh my gosh.
Meaning that they have, the people who have these can't, who don't have these originally, can't be breeding and selling them.
Oh.
It's like Burpee has patents on some things,
right,
et cetera.
Right.
And so the Tomotaki Santorini tomato. So people did actually, because people are people and they don't want to do what everyone says you can't do, planted the seeds.
Okay.
In other places. And they weren't cherry tomatoes.
What?
They got bigger.
Oh.
They were still good and lovely tomatoes, but they weren't tiny. So they go back and they look at Santorini and say, why are the tomatoes here little and the tomatoes over there aren't? And it turned out that Santorini, being a volcano, has very limited nutrition in the soil.
Oh.
It's pretty much limited to whatever that volcano was spewing out. And they vary from volcano to volcano.
Uh-huh.
But this one makes little bitty tomatoes.
Oh my gosh.
Delicious.
So just naturally.
Yep.
Oh,
so
my gosh.
There's nothing particularly special, it turns out, about the genetics of these things, except it's very special about where they grow.
Right. Oh, how fascinating.
So they claim they invented them. And then things get really strange, because the Israeli government has claimed for years that they invented cherry tomatoes.
Huh. That is incredible.
Why people get crazy about this, I don't understand. But before Israeli scientists figured out how to breed a variety that could be packed and shipped and sold before they spoiled, we were eating cherry tomatoes as children out of our own gardens.
Really?
Yeah, cherry tomatoes have been around for a long time, but they did not ship well.
Oh.
And if you pick Sun Golds, you'll realize what the problem is. When you pick these little tomatoes, very often the hooks to the stem is a little damaged when you pick them.
Oh.
And if you just put them in a bowl in the house, you'll notice they dry up pretty quickly.
Right.
That they don't ship well.
Okay.
You pick them and eat them.
Mm-hmm.
Or you get them at the farmer's market in the morning and you have them for lunch.
Right.
Or like most people at the farmer's market, you just walk around and eat them there.
So sounds good to me.
Cherry tomatoes have been around since they came from the New World. They were around in the New World. Things have been around for a really, really long time. Maybe around from 700 A.D.
Wow.
And this is a long time with association humans have had with tomatoes. But Marks and Spencer, which is a very ritzy British department store that has a very ritzy grocery department, decided that during the 1970s, these cherry tomatoes that they were using as a little garnish for salads and sandwiches and foods that they were packaging and sending to your home, which they do a lot of, decided they really wanted some of these cherry tomatoes they could sell to the public, but they had to pack and ship well.
Oh, sure.
You just don't see a whole lot of cherry tomato farms in the center of London.
Right.
So they get them from somewhere else. And they weren't looking as beautiful and lovely as Marks and Spencer wants everything to look. And so they worked really hard and tried to get somebody to help them develop a new one. And guess who they asked?
I don't know.
Who are the guys who are inventing cherry tomatoes? The Israelis. The food scientists in Israel.
Okay.
And they wanted a shelf-stable cherry tomato that would be sweeter than the ones that were generally found in the stores.
Right.
And so another grower in England also began, named Bernard Sparks, a very English name, he began looking at a kind of tomato called the Gardener's Delight. Now, you can still buy Gardener's Delights. I see seeds for them in the catalog all the time. They're the lovely little tomato. And he decided he was going to breed these and get them, you know. But he went for flavor. The Israelis went for pickable all at the same time. They grow in nice, neat rows. They would last longer on the shelves. They didn't work so hard on flavor.
Right.
And Marks and Spencer began to start selling the ones that Bernard Sparks was growing.
Oh.
Because they were shelf-stable enough.
Sure.
And they were delicious.
That makes sense.
So they're saying that they invented them.
Oh, my gosh.
So here we have, you know, the intrigue of the tomato world.
Oh, boy. Well, Linda, this has been fascinating, but I'm afraid we ran out of time. Thank you so much.
You bet. Let's do it again sometime.
Absolutely. Bye-bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to Over the Garden Gate, a program presented by the UCCE Master Gardeners of Tuolumne County. I'm Linda Reevely. Thank you for being with us.